Blog Talk Radio.
6 Degrees is another fine show brought to you by Law of Attraction Radio Network. It has been discovered that we are all connected by just 6 degrees of separation. Somehow, some way, we just need to open up the dialogue to see where our connections lie. Welcome to the 6 Degrees Show with your host, Anthony Bryce.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and good night. This is Anthony Bryce, the host of 6 Degrees. 6 Degrees is about connecting, and we are all connected. Somehow, some way, through dialogue, the essential connections are revealed. And today, for the first time on 6 Degrees, we have Swami Kriyananda. Swami Kriyananda is the last still teaching direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, author of Autobiography of a Yogi, and the man who brought yoga, meditation, and the wisdom of the East to the Western world. For 60 years, Swami Kriyananda has continued to teach the wisdom of Yogananda. Swami has authored more than 140 books, selling over 3.5 million copies, which are translated in 28 languages, as well as composed 400 pieces of music. Known as one of the world's foremost authorities on living wisely and well, Swami founded Ananda Worldwide, which are 8 spiritual communities throughout the U.S., Europe, and India, and with more than 1,000 residents. Swami is a member of the Club of Budapest, where he serves along with the Dalai Lama, Archbishop Tutu, Mikhail Gorbachev, Jane Goodall, Peter Gabriel, Eli Weissel, and other leaders of the planetary evolution of consciousness. And he has been honored with a multitude of prestigious awards for his spiritual leadership and commitment to humanity. World, this is Swami Kriyananda. Swami Kriyananda, this is the world on 6 Degrees. How are you today?
Thank you very much. I must say, I'd like to meet this here, Swami Kriyananda. I say that only partly jokingly, because the purpose of life is to get to know yourself, to know who you really are, which is a child of God.
Oh, Swami, thank you. Before we get too deep into our dialogue, what is the website that we can direct our listeners to while they're listening to this podcast?
Well, it's ananda.org, and also ananda, L-A, for Los Angeles.org. But that's just because I happen to be in Los Angeles right now. I'm actually working on a couple of movies, and we have some good directors and everybody, so one of them at least may become a major movie. I really hope it does. It's called Yogananda, and it's about his life. I wrote the script, and I'm thrilled to think that he may finally make it into the movie world.
Oh, with your strength and your spirit and your determination, I know without a doubt this will become a manifest reality. Why are you committed to promoting universal message of the oneness of harmony and of all the world religions? Why?
Well, you know, basically there's only one religion in the entire universe. It's not an ism. It's a simple fact that we have all come from God. God dreamed this entire universe into existence, and everything and everyone must ultimately merge back into him. Those two thoughts are uppermost in everybody's mind: how to avoid pain and how to find happiness. Well, that search for happiness is basically the soul's desire for bliss, because the nature of God is bliss, ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss. And we have that desire, And that is what impels us forward over many, many incarnations to the point where finally we understand that that's all we want in life.
Oh, bliss. It's so beautiful. And for clarity, I would like the listeners to know that the website Ananda is spelled A-N-A-N-D-A.
That means bliss.
Yes, thank you so very much. You know, meditation, Swami, for you is really the foundation of connecting with the source. Is it possible to lead us through a brief meditation as before we go deeper into the dialogue?
Let's think of it this way. Sit very straight, and then concentrate on your heart. Think of your heart as a lotus, and think of all the petals of the lotus turned up toward the brain. Feel that all the energy of your heart, the emotions, the likes, the dislikes, the ups and downs, all directed upward toward God. And your devotion also should be directed inward and upward toward God. So all your feelings. And then direct that energy past the medulla, which is the seat of ego, to the point between the eyebrows, which is the frontal lobe of the brain, and the most advanced part of the brain. And that point indicates that part of the frontal lobe which brings enlightenment. So meditate on that for a little while every day. If you could do it for 5 minutes, 15 minutes, you'll be amazed at what a change will come over you, even in a short time.
Thank you very much for that. In your 80 years of experience and spiritual advancement, Swami, what is the moment that you knew you were an enlightened spirit?
Well, I don't think of myself as enlightened at all. I'm sorry to say, I wish I could, but I'm working toward it. It takes a long time, but I don't want to discourage people. I have to say this, that I do feel bliss almost all the time. And it's well worth all the effort. There's a story of St. Teresa of Avila. She was crossing in her old age, crossing a river. It was in Spain, and her horse lost its footing and swept her down the stream. And her disciples thought that she was lost. And suddenly she found herself on the other bank and completely dry. And Jesus smiled at her. And he said, "Don't feel too badly, Teresa. This is how I treat all my friends." And she said, "Oh, my Lord, no wonder you have so few." So my guru told me that I would not find God until the end of life. He said, death itself will be your final sacrifice. So I have had a lot of work to do, and I think he has kept me from that degree that you talked about of enlightenment, just so that I could do this work.
Oh, that's incredible that you, after so you know, your life is so accomplished, Swami, and so many millions of people around the world admire you as an enlightened, quote unquote, enlightened spirit, and yet you remain so humble.
Well, you know, I'm the humblest person in the world, and I want everyone to know it. To me, the humility doesn't really matter. I just want God, that's all. And I don't really feel that I exist.
You said you don't feel that you exist?
No, I don't. I feel that he does everything through me.
That's interesting. You show in your teachings how to influence the outer world through your inner self, Swami. How is this possible?
Well, you know, I don't do it. That's what I say. I don't exist. The more I feel that I'm not doing it, the more I can do. For example, I mean, not normal people would not be able to do everything that I have done in this life. But the secret is that I haven't done it. I've let him do it through me. So, for example, I wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita based on my memory of what my guru had taught, And it took me less than 2 months to write 600 pages. I couldn't have done that, but he did. When I've written the songs, I've never thought, oh, so I know to go up, down, sideways. I've always just thought I want a song that says this, this, and this. And then I said, well, go out and give me a melody. And it's always there, and it's always the right one. But I can't claim credit for anything. That, again, is why I say I don't exist, because to the extent that I am not conscious of being the doer and letting him be the doer, to that extent, I'm able to do things well. And I think that some of the things that have been done through me have been good, and I'm very pleased, but not with myself, with the act.
That really does seem to be the key, doesn't it? It is as if you live in a state of being or a state of witnessing.
Well, yes, that's right. But, you know, I don't like to talk about me. I mean, who am I? I'm just a little blob on the landscape. But talk about him. He is so great. His joy is so great. His love is so perfect that really is why even think about people if you can think about him. He is the greatest wonder of everything.
You know, as you were speaking of him, I felt your compassion. I felt the love. And I thank you for
you know, years ago in Florence, I had a dream, a very vivid dream. There were many, many people, hundreds, I'd say, or more. And everybody was different. Some of them were criminals. Some of them were eagerly chasing the almighty Euro at that point, because this was Europe. And Florence, Italy, in other words. Anyway, I suddenly realized what is motivating every single person in this dream is the search for happiness, for bliss. And I thought, well, that is the real reason for loving everybody in the world. And I just can't help feeling that love.
Feeling. You know, as you go around the world, well, actually, to be honest, I don't think you really are going around the world. You're about to offer or do a course that you haven't done in over 40 years. Can you talk about your 6 weeks to lasting success and happiness?
Yes, in fact, it begins on this coming Tuesday, next Tuesday, and the classes are six in all. Right action, how to attract what you need when you need it, inspiration, the importance of right attitude, what is it to be practical, and first things first. It was very interesting. I began this series of classes because I was in India in the hospital. I had double pneumonia, and I was quite near death. And a doctor came in at that moment. I was almost unconscious. And he said, he came to my bed and he said, sir, can you help me? Well, usually when you're in that condition, doctors are there to help you. But he asked me, can you help me? I said, well, I can try. And he said that he had a son in college in Canada and he had lots of responsibilities. He said, how can I meet every responsibility and not cut a few ethical corners? And I said that I have founded many communities. I've done a great deal of work in my life. But I have found that by rigidly adhering to right action, that I have been successful. Unfortunately, I was not a good example of success at that moment, half or more than half unconscious. And so I decided the next day that I would write a course. And this course is actually 26 lessons, but I've abstracted these into these six lessons, which I'll be giving starting on the 1st of February. And I'm very much looking forward to it.
as sure as I'm sure that so are many, many of your fans and disciples. Now, would you call the people that you teach disciples of yours?
Well, I do not. I consider them disciples of my guru, disciples of truth. But I would rather not have the burden of a disciple. That's the responsibility.
That really does sound like a lot of responsibility, and I really share your sentiment as well. This course, 6 weeks to Lasting Success and Happiness, it's a series that you've decided to teach personally, and you haven't taught anything personally in over 40 years. Is this true?
Well, that's not quite right. I've done a great deal of teaching, but what I've done in the past, I gave series of classes in order to raise the money to build Ananda, and I didn't have any wealthy donors. I had to raise all that money myself. So I gave classes all around the Bay Area in San Francisco. I guess from Pensacola, the Bay Area doesn't mean much, but it's the area around San Francisco. And I gave these classes. They cost very little at that time, but times have changed now. The dollar isn't worth so much. But it was for 6 weeks, $15 for one series of Hatha Yoga postures, $25 if they took both that and meditation. And with that, I did raise the money, and God helped me to start the whole thing.
Thank you for that clarity. Why do you feel that it is imperative for you to personally teach this class at this time?
I tell you, it's because of two things. One is I heard my guru with my own ears talk about what a great depression we're coming into. I remember him even stopping his lecture on Sunday morning, a sermon, and crying out with great fervor, "You don't know what a terrible cataclysm is coming." And these are serious things. And I think I can make them more living than anyone else can. But after having given this first series, I'll turn over the job to somebody who's very interested in doing it. But I don't want to keep on doing it. But I do think it's important. I think this depression that I mentioned, I think it's bound to come. We're already in the middle of it, and the government won't tell us the whole truth. And I think that that's possibly going to lead to world war. I don't think if anybody wants to drop an atomic bomb, that he will drop it on Mount Shasta. He's much more likely to drop it on Los Angeles. And I think that we're headed for a very hard time. Anyway, for that reason, I want to impress on people with the full force of my conviction that there is a solution to all of this. If people will go out into the country and do what I have done, start communities with like-minded people, grow their own food, build their own buildings, they don't have to be touched by this depression. Whereas I think that if they stay in the cities and don't think in terms of leaving, it may be very difficult for them.
I do appreciate that insight as well, Swami. What will people learn and experience in this six-week course that will aid them and create value in their life?
I tell you, of course, I have a great deal to say, but let me give you the two principles on which I founded Ananda. One was people are more important than things. And the second is where there is right action, there is victory, success, happiness, and everything.
Action. That's without it, there's nothing. At the same time, there's no action. There's only being. It's kind of confusing for me.
Well, of course, that's true. But nonetheless, to be practical, we do have to act in this world. So we have to act with the right spirit. You know, here's an example of what I mean by right action. 1976, we had a forest fire which destroyed 450 of our 700 acres. It destroyed 21 of our homes. We didn't have any fire insurance. And it was discovered that the cause of the fire was a faulty spark arrestor on a county vehicle. So our neighbors excitedly told us we can sue and get all our money back, and they did. They didn't actually go to the point of suing, but the government paid them. And I wrote to the Board of Supervisors, I know that you're worried about how we will respond because we're the biggest losers. I want you to know that we will not be suing. We don't want to take our bad luck out on our neighbors. And with all those obstacles, no insurance, no money, no anything, still we rebuilt and are now really a shining example of success in the world. We're probably the best known community anywhere of its kind, I mean.
Well, thank you, Swami, so much for helping me to understand action, right action at its best and its finest. And it does come from the heart, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Is there, for those who are not able to attend the 6 weeks to Lasting Success and Happiness course, is there an online version or a way that they can attend other than physically?
I couldn't understand you completely.
Is there an online version for your course for those who cannot
attend? Oh, whole course will be online, too. They can get it over the Internet.
Now, what is that process if someone would want to register for the 6 weeks to Lasting Success and Happiness?
Is contact www.ananda, which means bliss, A-N-A-N-D-A, L-A for Los Angeles, .org. So www.ananda.org.
Oh, thank you so very much. There's, you know, just with your types of teaching and direction, the world will definitely be a better place. And isn't that the message of your mentor and your guide, Yogi Yogananda?
You know, he taught, he did have disciples. He was a great soul. And I really teach only as his disciple. But he taught contact with God, communion with God, and he taught how to live a godly life. He was not afraid, as so many people are, to use the word God. To him, that word meant the conscious bliss, out of which everything has come and into which everything must melt, as I said earlier.
Paul, do you have any words from Yogi Yogananda, any words that really resonate in your heart that you would like to share?
Well, he said, love God first, love God second, love God last. And the main thing is love. So many people go by the intellect. They think they can understand by being able to define something. I can define a full stomach, but I can still be hungry if I haven't actually filled it. And so the definitions of the intellect, I tell you, the intellect and the feeling quality of the heart, these two are absolutely necessary. And people try to eliminate the heart's feelings. They'll never understand with the intellect alone. The intellect observes. The heart, the feeling quality, merges in and becomes one with.
And you have methodologies and practices that enable people to really become clear to this reality.
You know, the clarity is not something you create. It's something you open yourself to. Actually, many Christians, for example, are against yoga, thinking that yoga is presuming to give you God. Yoga doesn't presume anything. But if the sunlight is shining on the side of a building, you can have the curtains of your room closed or open. That isn't the part of the sun. You have to open your curtains so the sun can come in. So yoga is a way of opening you to receive the light of grace. But finally, everything is God's grace. And he does everything finally, even leading you to yoga, even helping you to breathe, helping you to eat. Everything is grace. We have to understand how we can open ourselves to him. Now, the body is a very interesting mechanism because the energy in the body can go down or up. And this is a universal experience of everybody, that when the energy moves down, you feel unhappy. And so we have words even that say that. I feel depressed, I feel downcast, I feel low. Or if the energy goes up, we actually have words. I feel uplifted, I feel inspired, I feel high. All these things are just sort of instinctive human descriptions of what they know happens. Well, yoga makes a point of saying, look at this, you know this already. Make a point of using it for your own higher development. So yoga says concentrate in the spine and try to raise the energy. And this is the whole purpose of Kriya Yoga. To try to raise the energy in the spine and bring it up to the higher centers and to the point between the eyebrows, as I said earlier. But everything finally depends on raising the energy. This is what the purpose of yoga, in a sense, is. You have to raise the energy, but that doesn't presume to bring you God. You bring yourself in a position, let me put it this way too. The energy in the heart is the sort of the pivotal point in the body. When the energy goes down there, you feel badly. When the energy goes up from there, you feel better. In the ego, it's centered in the medulla oblongata, at the base of the at the base of the brain. And you can tell that most people, they tend to look down their noses at others. Well, that's a sign of extreme ego. The universal sign of humility all over the world in every culture is a bow, signifying a release, the relaxation of the energy in the medulla oblongata and the offering of it forward to the point between the eyebrows. So if you can bring your energy up to the point between the eyebrows, remember, God doesn't come to you. His grace is not a question of likes and dislikes. He doesn't say, I'm going to give this person my grace because I like his beautiful blue eyes. When you do the right thing, he's there. So yoga is not forcing God to come to you, but it's putting you in a position where God will want to come to you because you're ready and waiting for him and in the right way. There are people who sincerely seek God and don't know where to look for him. And it's not that he doesn't want to come to them, but if you're in a room and want to get out of the room, you have to go out through the door. You can't go out through the wall or the floor or the ceiling. And the yoga simply tells you universal truths that can help you to get out of this physical consciousness and into openness to the divine.
What do you say to people like myself that are just physically, you know, ever since I was a little boy, Swami, I couldn't even sit in the style, it's quote-unquote Indian style, you know, my hips are really tight. How do you help people with physical limitations or their bodies just aren't really set?
Well, you're talking to one of them right here. I mean, I'm going on 85 years old and I can't get into those postures, but you can sit in a chair. You can have your spine straight. You can put your hands on the sides of the palms upward. Keep your spine straight. and get away from the back of the chair, get away from it. All this is all you need. The yoga postures certainly are helpful. But I have to admit, although I was good at them at one time, I am not good now, and I don't notice it really hurts me. So don't worry about that.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Because honestly, that I really had an aversion to yoga because of my physical limitations of flexibility. Although, you know, I was a gymnast and I did overcome quite a bit of those limitations.
Yeah.
You've written a screenplay that's capturing the essence of your mentor.
He wrote, as you said, he wrote Autobiography of a Yogi. In fact, I read that book in New York in 1948, and I took the next bus across the country to become his disciple. But I don't think that book will ever be made into a movie. First of all, there's no plot in it. Secondly, he's too self-abasing and self-effacing. You can't have the hero of a movie self-effacing. If he writes the book, fine. If I were to write a book like that, saying he's nothing, it wouldn't sound good at all. So I think a completely different movie was necessary. Fortunately, my own ambition before I met him was to become a playwright. And so I wrote this movie, and it contains many stories that are not in the autobiography, stories that he would have omitted naturally because they showed how great he was. But I think this movie is going to really be a wonderful and very important thing. I would like it to be a major movie. And of course, I'm the only person living who could tell them how he really was, how he acted, his gestures, everything. So it's important that I hang in there until at least this movie gets done.
Well, yeah, that's really important. And please do hang in there until the movie's done, because it's I can't wait to see it myself.
Well, it's a form of art. The trouble with a theater is only a limited number can see it, and you can't get up close to the people, and they have to shout. You can't whisper on the stage. A stage whisper is a sort of shout. And so in the movies, it's a wonderful medium, actually. And I'm greatly looking forward to it, too.
Mm. So intention, Swami, what is intention and why is it such a foundation of your teachings?
Well, intention, after all, you have to mean well. But usually you have to do more than mean well. You have to do well. And so I say intention is a good start. But after that, go ahead and do. Put your thoughts, your intentions into action. But yes, they have to be the right intentions, of course.
So what? Go ahead.
And I don't really go with that word intentions. I think other people have foisted that onto me, but I'm much for doing.
That makes sense. Instead of the word intention, doing, because it's the doing is actually an expression of your heart, isn't it?
Well, it should be. I really wonder if it's possible to do a thing without having your heart somewhat enter it. But I've noticed a lot of people try to work just intellectually. It never seems to be nearly so effective. I could go on at length on that subject because it happens to be one I'm really keen on. If we can allow our higher self to act through us, we can accomplish much, much more than if we think I am doing it.
That is such a real key to that, to the existence and to being, I guess, living in your authenticity and having success coming to your life and being happy. You know, Swami, your lasting success and six, you know, the course that's coming up. You talked about first things first. What, you know, if if the higher forces are really flowing through you, what is it? Why is it so important to put things in order consciously or with intention?
You know, there are a lot of yogis who sit in caves in the Himalayas and don't do anything for people. I don't know. I respect their attitude. But I can't help feeling that if you're living in this world, you ought to express your gratitude to it by doing some good. I myself have an intense desire to help people. And what I want to help them with is happiness. I know that if they are truly happy, they will be able to accomplish anything else that they want.
You know, and that's so true. It really is so true, because without happiness, you know, it's just, it seems to be a drain, just really a drain on all your actions, your thoughts, your words, and your deeds just don't have that same flavor.
I agree.
Yes, sir, Swami, your music, it's beautiful. And how can people, first and foremost, how can people get a hold of your music?
Would you like to hear one of my songs?
I would love to.
The green summer fade and winter draw near. My Lord, in your presence, I live without fear. Through tempest, through snow, through turbulent tide, the touch of your hand is my strength and my guide. I ask for no riches that death can destroy. I crave only thee, your love and your joy. I ask for no riches that death can destroy. I crave only thee, your love and your joy. The dances will pass, the singing must end. I welcome the darkness with you for my friend.
Oh, thank you so much. I received that. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. I tell you how I wrote that song. Somebody came to me and spent an hour insulting me, telling me all that I had done, that I was a complete failure in life. At the end of an hour, I thanked him, and I went down to my piano and wrote this song.
Your 400 pieces of music. What's your main instrument?
I sing. That's my main instrument. But I also have played the piano, studied for years, practiced hours every day. So that's an instrument I know but never practice anymore. I've written a sonata. I don't know string instruments, but I've written what I think is a very nice string quartet. And I've written a lot of other things for flute and so on. So I have found my reason for writing music was to touch people's hearts with truth. But I discovered in time that you don't need words to touch their hearts. And so then I turned to writing instrumental music also.
That is so... Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that thought. Swami, you've been appointed to membership in the prestigious Club of Budapest. What is that?
Well, to be perfectly truthful, I don't really know. I know I'm a member, but I don't know what it's all about. We've never had a meeting as far as I know. So let's call it honorary. Somebody would ask me that question, and I have to be truthful. I don't know what it's all about. But of course, it's to help bring peace, and I'm trying to do that with my life.
So it's obviously a circle of
people dedicated to world peace and harmony.
That's right. And you've been inducted into it, kind of like, you know, I guess it's kind of like the Hall of Fame or of any sport or thing of that nature.
Maybe that.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Okay.
So you do television in India as well, or is that your path?
No, I had a program every day of the year for all the year around. And that went on for 2 or 3 years, I think. Then I needed the money to help create a community near Pune in South India. But it was really, I enjoyed that program a lot. And wherever I'd go, I mean, in India it reached many millions, about 20 million people was the estimate. And so people would greet me in the streets and so on. It was sort of fun, feeling friends everywhere.
Well, thank you. I've got to ask, I just want to roll back a little bit, the hands of time, and we really only have about 10 more minutes left. I would like for you to, if you would, go back to your childhood and share some of your experiences that brought you to walk the path that you're walking.
Well, I've had a bit of a peculiar childhood. I don't mean bad. I loved it. I was very happy, but I was born of American parents in Romania. My father was an oil geologist, and I lived there for 13 years. I was sent away to school in Switzerland and then in England, and I remember one episode. This came after we came here to America, and there was a big boy. I weighed at that time 107 pounds. I was 13 years old. He was 15 and weighed 230 pounds, and he decided that he didn't like my un-American ways, and he had it in for me. So one day he burst into my room and beat me to a pulp. And he kept muttering, we were three stories up. He said, I want to throw you out the window. I want to throw you out the window. And there was nothing I could do. I just lay there and took it. And later somebody said, well, why didn't you cry for help? And I said, because I wasn't afraid. I just believe in even-mindedness, and it's more than a belief. It's something I was born with. And so I actually beat him. Even though he beat my body, I beat his spirit. After that, he gave me a wide berth and many experiences like that. But I've grown up speaking many languages, and it's made me fascinated with traveling and so on. But when you put it to me, what specific things did you learn? Well, I think I began learning when I was in this country, in America. And first of all, I wanted to become an astronomer. And I realized that's not going to give me what I want because there's no happiness in it. In fact, the only way to enjoy looking at the stars is not to be an astronomer. They have too many mechanical formulae to work with, mathematical formulae, I mean. Then I wanted to be in politics, and I thought of different political systems. I realized no system's going to affect people. They affect the system. Then I tried getting into the arts. And as you know, I'm a musician. I've painted paintings, and I've done different things like that. And I decided to be a playwright. And then I thought that I don't know truth. How can I be a playwright and share truth with people when I don't know truth myself? And I decided to give it up. And I remember I didn't know whether there's a God or not. My church sort of put me off as far as God was concerned. And I always tried to find a truth without him. But I realized that without him, nothing will work. There's got to be a God. So I remember I was in Charleston, South Carolina, studying playwriting, and I took a long walk out into the countryside, and I asked myself this question, if there's a God, what must he be? And I realize he has to be consciousness. He can't just be a policeman up there or a judge. He's got to be consciousness. And the reason I'm conscious is because he's conscious. That means my consciousness is expressing his consciousness. And the closer I am to godly thoughts, the happier I am. The more I think selfishly and revengefully or anything, I didn't have that, but anyway, that sort of thought, the unhappier I was. And so I decided then the goal of life has to be to seek God. I had never read the lives of saints. I didn't know they existed. But I knew that I had to dedicate myself to finding God. I thought that maybe I'm going crazy. Nobody's ever had these thoughts before. And I tried going out in the country to escape this truth. And I looked at the beautiful dewdrop on a leaf and the sun shining on it. My mind could say that's beautiful. My heart couldn't feel it. I was like a motor working only on one cylinder. And I thought, no, there's just got to be, it's got to be the experience. Well, my father had been sent to Egypt to look for oil there. The very day that I found Autobiography of a Yogi, I put my mother on the ship. I went uptown New York. There I found that book. And that book absolutely changed everything in my life. That was 63 years ago, Mary. And I took the next bus as I went across the country. I never imagined that I would ever address these words to anyone. But the first words I addressed to him were, I want to be your disciple. And he accepted me, fortunately, that same day. And I've been following him ever since.
It's okay, you know, to really have a mentor in life. Why do you think it's so important to have a mentor?
Well, I'll tell you my experience. I'll tell you also that many people who ask me, do I need a guru? I say, absolutely not. You don't want a guru because they think of it as a burden, as slavery. It's not that at all. But I tried to help myself by changing my habits, changing my attitudes, improving myself one way or another. It was like washing a dirty shirt. When a bubble comes in the shirt, you push it down and it just moves somewhere else, and it comes up somewhere else. I just, no matter what I did to improve myself, while I was concentrating on that effort, some other fault would increase. And I finally realized I need help. It's only when you reach that point where you see the need for somebody who knows more than you, who can tell you how to make the changes you yourself want. Yogananda didn't impose himself on anybody. He offered, but it was completely free. We were free to follow or not follow. And I had met people who didn't follow. But I found that those who did had no cause for complaint. I did. I never felt enslaved. I always felt that this is the way to my own freedom. And I've always found that to be so.
Thank you. Thank you again so very much. And the last question, Swami, that I would like to ask. Your underlying message is bliss. And you say that the goal of life is bliss. How does one get there from here?
By removing the obstacles, Karen. You are a child of God. You are his manifestation. There's nothing you need to do to attain it, but you do need to remove from your mind those things that are not godly. For example, selfishness, greed, all the faults that we all know. But finally, you need to overcome that thought that anything else will satisfy you. If our listeners were to do one little thing, I would be satisfied. Try for 1 week to think of God all the time, not in terms of he or she, but you. I'm going for a walk now, God. I'm taking this fork and putting it in my mouth. I'm lying down to sleep. I'm doing everything with you, not for you, with you. You'll be amazed how your consciousness will change, even in 1 week.
Swami Kriyananda, thank you so much again for coming on to 6 Degrees and sharing your life. And
thank you so much for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good night.
Bye-bye.